This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning. You're now listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Connison. This morning, I'm speaking with Lim Keng Yao, CEO of the Malaysia Steel Institute. And really, the big question here is, does Malaysia have it to continue being part of the steel industry going forward? Keng Yao, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roshan. Please call me Jared.
All right then, Jared. So I think there's no doubt that steel and iron, these industries are very important to everything that we want to produce, right?
Yes.
But the thing is, considering our relative size in this sector, does it make sense for Malaysia to continue to produce not just steel products, but iron products as well?
Malaysia consumes around 10 million tons of steel per year. And we projected in the next 10 years, we will increase by 6 million ton. Increased by 6 million to 16 million ton by end of 2030. Why? Because Malaysia have a lot of plans, infrastructure plans, manufacturing plans in under RMK-12 and RMK-13. So when you have a lot of manufacturing base and infrastructure development, you need steel to make it happen. Without it, you are import dependent, which is not good for the country.
But isn't that the case currently? Don't we have a steel importing deficit at this point?
Yes, but the figure is improving. Let me share with you some of the data. In 2018, we imports relative at 31 billion ringgit of steel. In 2019, the figure remained the same, with just a 200,000 ringgit increase. So it's very marginal. Well, for our export activity, we have increased to 18 billion ringgit. So our industry players are starting to play the exporting role. And I foresee for Malaysia, in the next few years, with the few new steel plants currently under construction, we will see more export activity. That will bring down the import dependency and give us a better trade balance in the steel industry.
Right. So I guess my question here, Jared, is then why is it a problem if we import steel, especially if other countries can do it at a more cost-efficient level?
We must understand, when someone sells steel to you cheap, doesn't mean it's going to be cheap forever. Eventually, they will raise the price. If you don't produce your own steel, right, you are always dependent on import. That's very unhealthy.
So essentially, it's a strategic move then, is that right?
Yes, it's a strategic industry. Iron steel is a strategic industry. Similar like what the U.S. have done, they protect the domestic industry for war purposes, for safety purposes, for development purposes. If you don't have steel, you cannot develop your own country at all.
You know? So with that in mind then, can our local industry survive without the support of the government? I think this is a big question, especially now when government revenue is a big question in the air.
Okay. If we compare with country like China, they are heavily subsidized by the country. They are the world's biggest steel manufacturer currently. 20, 30 years ago, they are nowhere near in the steel manufacturing. We were the top steel producer in ASEAN in the past. Steel is a commodity products. So it highly depends on the raw material. So if you let me go back to the earlier explanation. If you're using blast furnace, you heavily dependent on iron ore. And if you are on an electric arc furnace, you're heavily dependent on the scrap for producing your steel. So therefore, without government support in certain ways, such as the clear policy or energy competitive rates, then it's quite difficult for the steel industry to be always stand alone by itself. So they still need certain kind of support from the government. Yeah.
All right. So essentially, I guess what I'm gathering here is that steel is a strategic asset, or at least a strategic industry to a country's development. Mm. And basically, I think most countries are subsidizing their industries in one way or another. The question I have here is then, how competitive are we in the production of steel compared to the bigger players like, say, India or China or even Korea and Japan? Where do we stand in that ranking?
Okay. Let me break down the explanation. First, there is a different technology employed. For example, if you use the blast furnace technology, that is the lowest output cost in producing steel. However, the investment is super high in billions of ringgit. So the second scenario is the electric arc furnace, which I explained earlier. The investment cost probably is 20% of a blast furnace, like 200-300 million ringgit investment. But due to raw material costs such as the scrap and electricity cost, which is a bit higher in Malaysia, slightly higher than the average from other competitive country, so the end output cost is slightly higher. The variance, we have done a comparative study, is approximately like 8.6%. So if you're looking at competitive in manufacturing, we are very competitive in manufacturing. But certain conditions like the raw material energy cost, the steel mill is beyond their control. So the only way is they have to move to a different manufacturing category. For example, avoiding the light products, then go into specialty product, go into niche market or niche product, go into high-grade steel. So Malaysia have a big opportunity because in not only looking at Malaysian market, the industry should also look at the ASEAN market as well, whereby they can export their products regionally.
And so that's the goal, right? Not to just satisfy our local demand for steel, because currently we're a net importer, but we want to export it forward. And actually, we're going to get into that in just a little bit. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. This morning, I'm speaking with Lim Keng Yao, CEO of the Malaysia Steel Institute, a unit under the purview of the Ministry of International Trade and Industry. And we're talking about the viability of the Malaysian steel industry. So I understand that the steel industry has submitted a white paper to MITI about what they want from the government, essentially. What kind of support can we give the steel industry in order to make them, one, more competitive, and two, get them to that export level, to those sophisticated specialty products?
Okay. Actually, the white paper initiative came from former KSU, former Secretary General of Ministry of International Trade and Industry, and we were appointed to be the secretariat for the white paper. So me and my team, we work with the industry comprising of 10 steel associations. So it was initially it was a chaos to manage 10 group of different mindset of association, right? Because different associations have different objective. So we spent approximately 7 months working with them to come up with a white paper. We came up with numerous kind of arguments and the way forwards in those workshops. We have many numerous workshops so that the intention is what best for Malaysia, not for one specific group of people. So we came up with a white paper in 2019. The paper has been presented to the Malaysian government, and currently we are waiting for the approval from the cabinet. So, and in the process, we clearly see what is actually happened, what is wrong with us, why we didn't move forward while countries like Vietnam and Indonesia have moved way ahead of us when we were the pioneer in this region. We understand what happened. And what I earlier mentioned just now, those are the recommendation actually come from the white paper requirement. And even the data that I mentioned about how we can reach that level, the industry all agree we have to move to the next level. And the next level is to go into the industrial products. Yeah.
What were the challenges in the past that led to this? Why did we drop the ball if we were the leaders in ASEAN?
One of the things we identified was wrong technology employed in the steelmaking process. It's unfortunate, but it's never too late to change. But to change, it costs a lot of investment. And we are seeing those changes now, employing the right technology. Actually, we need the right technology in the steelmaking to help you to be very competitive. In the manufacturing process, we are very good. Yeah, but if you use the wrong tools, example now, for layman explanation, your cost will be higher. While example, you're using a computer instead of using a typewriter. You should use a computer, not a typewriter, to write a letter, example. So your cost will be much efficient, right? So similarly, if you use the good technology, right technology to produce steel, your cost will be much lower.
Right, and who bore the cost of that technological mistake? Was it the private side or was it the government?
Of course, the private industry, because they are the ones who invested, and some lesson learned. But of course, it's not totally an error, because we also must understand we are not like China, 1.2 billion population, that you're going to produce such a wash capacity and there is no taker. So at that time, it's the right decision. But over time, when time change, technology, the cost, the expectation is very high, that does not make sense for current operation.
All right, so we talked about a population there. Now, we're a relatively small country. Even within the region, we've got much bigger countries around us. Mm-hmm. One of the numbers you cited earlier was that we are expected to see steel demand go from 10 million tons to 16 million over the next few years. Mm-hmm. Where is that demand going to come from?
Okay, let me give you an example. You look at Taiwan. Taiwan do not have a big population, but they're producing steel three times more than us. Yeah, because after producing the necessary steel for their own consumption, they are very export-orientated, similar like Korea. So we should look into that way. But then we come to the point today in the world where you look at the global protection, starting from President Trump, where they put US 232 in place, followed by US 301. So things start to change. But a lot of people in the international trade, they fail to understand the WTO guideline. What is the anti-dumping? What is the safeguard? What is the countervailing measure that is available in the WTO guideline?
So steel dumping was a big issue, I think, in the early 2000s and carried through that decade. Is that still a big problem today?
It's still a big problem today. Malaysia faced dumping activity from China from 2014 until 2016. Our local industry suffered a loss of 7 billion ringgit from this dumping activity. What China were trying to do was, in order to bring down the cost, they have to push up the capacity. So when you bring up the capacity to a higher level and you have the access, they were dumb it. And they have a lot of government subsidy, 13% for export. So our Malaysian steel industry have been injured. And thanks to MITI, we have the safeguard in place to protect the local player. There was higher tax imposition from China and to stabilize the local steel industry.
So that was the anti-dumping duty, is that right?
That was a safeguard duty. Mm-hmm. It was expired recently in April.
So with that expiration then, does that mean that there are no countermeasures at this point?
No, because we cannot simply put a safeguard in place. The industry needs to be injured. Mm. So once it's no longer injured, and when the term expired, the safeguard is lifted.
And so with that in mind, will our steel industry be able to fend for itself at this point?
Currently, we are exporting to few countries. Like I say, we must understand what is the dumping activity. Okay, so then we understand why these countries are doing this. So based on X factory price, we have to base on X factory price. You sell this steel, let's say 100 ringgit in China, but let's say when you export this steel, the same steel minus the shipping costs and all the duties and whatever, you sell 80 ringgit into Malaysia, right? So the difference is 20. So that is the dumping margin. Mm-hmm. So if a government put that duty, safeguard or anti-dumping on that particular company or country that is dumping, that is the difference of a percentage that will be imposed.
To equalize the pricing, essentially.
It's just to equalize. It's not to benefit our local player, so that everybody in the fair level playing field.
So, Jared, when it comes to exporting, who are some of our biggest partners in this field?
Right now, we're quite fragmented, because we advise our steel industry, you should fragment your exportation. because there is something called to be avoid from this all these kind of non-trade barriers and duty being imposed onto our country or industry player. So, for example, if you keep selling to one particular country, then we may be targeted to have a dumping activity.
Right, so spread it out so that there's no concentration risk, essentially. Mm.
Try not to sell cheap. Try to sell same or higher. Because in business, you have to make money. But in the steel industry, it's so competitive.
When we look at the ASEAN region, you mentioned earlier that we want to become a bigger part of the ASEAN steel story, right? Who are some of these countries that we want to be exporting more to? Where can we do better?
We can do better in few. A bit difficult to export to country like Thailand and Indonesia. They have imposed quite a number of NTB, non-trade barrier. Whereas we don't do that. Malaysia, we have been liberalized since 2009, and we don't have imposed any trade barrier like Thailand and Indonesia. So for our industry member to export to these two regions, they have a lot of challenges. Yeah, so opportunity, we can export to China, we can export to Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, you know, Singapore, Brunei, country like that, and also the other less developing country like Burma. Yeah, we can do it. I am sure. I believe we can do it.
Now, looking locally, what are the main components of demand here in Malaysia?
Actually, 55% of the steel demand in Malaysia is the construction industry.
And is it relatively equal for the other parts of the business?
The industrial product consume 45% of the steel industry.
Okay.
Yeah. That 45% have many, many type of industries, such as the automotive, shipbuilding, E&E, you know, other industrial products, equipment products.
All right. So right now, construction is still the bigger component, 55% of
yes.
that. Do you expect that to change in the next few years?
Yeah, from the white paper study, we expect there's a shift from the dependence on the construction steel towards the industrial steel. So when we reach 16 million ton, we're looking at 65% we are going to the industrial steel requirement, and 35% will be at the construction side.
Right, so essentially, if we can start building, essentially provide the supplies for the other types of products, industrial products, and again, this leads to that point we were talking about earlier. We need to go into more specialty products that, in terms to go up the value chain.
That's right. We are net importer, namely because of the industrial products, which was not available in Malaysia for a period of 4 or 5 years. And right now, there's two companies now, they are under construction, in building the factory for their products. So hopefully soon enough, in 2 years' time, we will see the availability of these products in the marketplace.
So Jared, from our conversation, it's very clear that steel is a highly subsidized industry across the world. Everyone is trying to protect their own markets and their own industries there. Is that just something that's going to just keep going on, that governments are going to have to perpetually support their own steel industries?
It looks that way. But down here in Malaysia, we are working very closely with our industry players to continue to remain competitive. In order to do that, they need to continue upgrading their technology in their factories, keep upgrading the know-how and the skill of steelmaking process in their plant.
And do you have any numbers in terms of like how much this has cost the government over the last few years, the last few decades?
Actually, the last few years, both sides was not in a good position. Why? Because just now I mentioned, 2014 to 2016, the industry lost $7 billion. So when the industry lost so much money due to the dumping activity by China's side, they're not declaring any profit. So there's no revenue for the government. So it's unfortunate that at that time, the government also collected a very low revenue to few companies that did make it, but most of them did not make it. Whereas if you look at 2018, the revenue for the government was good because everybody was making money because the steel price was good, the limited dumping activity was in the marketplace, and everybody was enjoying the good time. But when come to 2019, the scenario has changed, and when come to right now with COVID-19, with MCO in place, activity was at a standstill. So it's currently we are facing a different challenges all together again.
All right. And on that note, Jared, I'd like to thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Roshan, for inviting me.
I've been speaking to Lim Keng Yao, CEO of the Malaysia Steel Institute, and this has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Karnason for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.